I'm Sequoia Ezekwe for Ear to the Streets of Portland on the best community radio station on the planet, KBOO Community Radio, KBOO Portland.
Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KBOO. Consider adding KBOO to your will or add KBOO as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change. But recognizing KBOO along with your family and friends in your legacy giving is a powerful commitment to media justice. Let us know if you add KBOO to your plans. We'd like to thank you for your considerate future gift. Contact us at 503-231-8032. Or email development@kboo.fm to notify us of your plans.
From Pacifica Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein with Miguel Gavila Molina. Today on the show, we'll feature an extended interview with the United Farm Workers President Teresa Romero, speaking out against the crackdown on those brown workers who do the hardest work in this country and now face jail and deportation for their amazing and crucial efforts. Romero was arrested recently during a UCSF Regents meeting in San Francisco to express her total solidarity with the UC frontline workers. Also, Renee Saucedo, founder of Almas Libres Collective, joins us for a report on the Trump crackdown on domestic workers and day laborers in Sonoma County, California. And we might have a drop-in from Mike Ferrante. He's the past National Director of Veterans for Peace. He threw his blood on the U.S. mission in New York to protest the ongoing expanding genocide in Gaza. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. I'm here with Miguel Gavila Molina. You may have heard that, among other things, immigration enforcement operations on farms have left crops rotting, farm operations disrupted in major agricultural states, including California, Texas, and Pennsylvania. Farm owners and industry representatives report that up to 70% of workers stopped reporting to work following immigration and customs enforcement actions, and they have been widespread. We're going to be talking about this and a number of other related issues with Teresa Romero. We are honored to have her back here on Flashpoints. Ms. Romero, it is good to have you with us. You are the president of the United Farm Workers. They certainly have been spotlighted by the Trump folks and his vision of deporting anybody essentially who isn't white. Things are not looking good. Thanks for joining us. Could you just remind people a little bit about the United Farm Workers, who you represent, and something about the history of the union? Then I really want to get into what's been going on.
Yes, thank you for having me. A pleasure to be with you again. This is a very important issue. The UFW is in existence for over six decades, and our primary focus has been organizing and protecting farm workers. We know that farm workers do not have rights to organize. In 48 of the states in the country, they only have these rights in California and in New York. So everything that we are able to gain for farm workers, any protection that we are able to attain in any legislation that we're able to pass, it doesn't only benefit the workers that we represent, it helps every single farm worker in this country, and that's exactly what we want to continue doing. When things are so difficult, they need to know that the UFW is here to continue working for them to make sure that they're protected.
And could you talk a little bit about the multiple struggles that have come up, essentially really spread out since Trump took office? So please take a minute or two to give us a sense, because I don't think people understand what it looks like on the ground for brown workers under Trump.
You're absolutely right, Dennis. He has created chaos in the agriculture industry and agriculture areas in this country. A lot of people say farm workers are being detained and arrested. And what I say is farm workers are being kidnapped by people who are wearing a mask, who are not wearing a specific uniform, who are driving vehicles that are unmarked, and they don't have a court order. They don't have a name of a person they're looking for. They don't have any documents signed by the judge saying that they can go in the field, which is private property. And this is something that it should never happen. When we try to find out where the workers are, it's very difficult because we don't have their names. We don't know where they took them. We don't know what agency took them. And it is creating, affecting obviously immediately the lives of the men and women that work in the fields. But it's affecting their families, it's affecting their communities. Farm workers right now go to work and come back. They don't go out into the park with the kids. They don't go out at school functions with the kids. They don't go and have pizza with the kids. So it is affecting their communities, and sooner or later, it's going to affect all of us.
Yes, it is. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We are honored to have the president of the United Farm Workers, President Teresa Romero. We're talking about the multiple struggles that are facing farm workers and their families. I went to the UFWA website and I saw this absolutely heart-wrenching sound of this man who was beside himself. His wife and young baby had essentially disappeared, been kidnapped. He didn't know where they were. He didn't even know where to start to get help.
Exactly. And that's what we're facing more and more. And that's what I was saying. I have talked to people, to families of those who have been detained or deported. I've talked to children, and we need to remember these children are U.S. citizens, and they are terrified that their parents might be taken. They don't want to go to school because they're afraid that when they come home, mom and dad are not going to be there. And the cruelty that we are seeing in agriculture areas, and like you said earlier, brown people. They are targeting brown people because, like I said, they don't even have a name or an arrest warrant. It is just taking any brown person that they find, and some of them at either legal residents or could be citizens. But it is the cruelty, and I just want to believe this is not the country we are. We're much better than that.
Yes, I would hope so. Dennis Bernstein here, also joining our conversation with UFW President Teresa Romero is our senior producer, Miguel Gavilan Molina. Welcome in, Miguel.
Thank you, Dennis, and thank you, President Romero, for joining us. It's a massive concern, and I think one of the most important things, and the farm workers have always been able to do that, is reach out beyond the fields, reach out into cities, into other areas. Because one thing that's really important, I think, in particularly here in the state, is that people need to make the connection with their food and where it comes from. You know, from, you know, toiling in the soil to planting, cultivating, growing, harvesting, you know, picking and packing and canning, loading, you know, the food on the trains, on the trucks and so forth, transferring, you know, delivering, the whole preparation of food and serving even comes to the table. At every level of food production and food serving, there are brown hands involved. And most of us that are, you know, from the area, that are Latino, Chicano, indigena, we all eventually came from the fields. With that said, you know, the most vulnerable workers, because out in the fields, out in the rural areas, President Romero, you know, there's not, you know, a bunch of people, you know, across the street or hanging out in the sidewalks in areas where they can pull out a camera and take pictures of the abuses that happen. Out in the rural areas, there isn't that. So my concern is, or for instance, churches stepping up, our community social justice groups stepping up and helping the United Farm Workers. Because, you know, people staying home and not going to work, that means money, that means food. You know, are people getting food? You know, are people being helped with food? If people aren't going to work, you know, how are they surviving? Those are big concerns that I have.
Absolutely, and we do have different areas of food drives, but let me tell you something, that misconception is that farm workers are not going to work. Farm workers may not go 1 or 2 days when they see a big presence of these vehicles and these people that are detaining immigrants. But we need to remember that they have a family to support. They have a rent to pay. They have utilities. Yes. They have to buy food for their kids.
Yes.
So after a couple of days, they go back to work. And the irony of this is that if you think about it, during the pandemic, Trump said the farm workers were essential. And he said it because he wanted them to keep working. And some of them lost their lives. But they are essential. And they were undocumented, or the majority of them were undocumented in the previous administration. So right now that he surrounded himself with people that are very anti-immigrant and racist, they are now, all of a sudden, they're not essential anymore. And we're going to find out the hard way. For those who are not, like you just said, you are come and understand agriculture and the hard work that they do every day. But there's a lot of people who don't. And if consumers don't step up and demand that these workers are respected, are giving a path to legalization, they are going to pay the price. Because at one point, we're going to go to the market and we're not going to find everything we want, and whatever we find is going to be very expensive. So we have introduced, and you know that because we talked about it before, once again, the Farm Workforce Modernization Act that will give farm workers a path to legalization. Trump has said in social media and news that he is going to stop the raids, but it's just rhetoric. If he's serious about it, there is a bill that would solve the problem for agriculture, that would benefit the workers and ensure that the employers have the workforce, experienced and professional workforce they need. So let's not reinvent the wheel. That's a bill that has support from Republicans. Let's move it. Let's get it to his desk, and he can sign it. These problems will be solved.
I think you're correct, President Romero. You know, and one thing that you pointed out, and it's so true, and that's that farm workers are essential in the food chain. Their brown hands hold the chains of the industrial agricultural empire of California that has made this state the fourth economic power on earth. You know, some of the biggest donors for the Republican, the MAGAs, come out of the San Joaquin and Central Valley. Are some of those agricultural companies, owners, CEOs, are they showing any kind of, you know, voicing their concern, you know, protesting against the administration's, you know, current policies, or are they just holding their breath? One of the things that I've heard, and it kind of made me a little nervous, is that some of these agricultural conglomerates, massive corporations in the valleys, are beginning to hire foreign workers. In other words, not from the Americas, but from other parts of the world. Have you heard anything like that? Are foreign workers being hired to replace farm workers?
That is the problem. There is the guest worker program that workers come here with a visa that is called H-2A. But what the employers want to do is get rid of all the protections, get rid of the wages that they're supposed to be paying. They want to, I don't understand how they want to bring other workers to replace the workers that they already have here that have been working in their farms for years and sometimes decades. It just doesn't make sense. What they want to be able to do is control, have more control of the workers, pay them less, have the ability to say, if a worker said, you did not pay me for my entire week, the first thing that many employers say is, okay, you're going to go back and I'm not going to bring you next year. So that, what that does is make it easy for farm workers to be even more abused than what they are right now. And that's one of the things that we don't want. We don't want, you know, just the idea of employers getting to decide which of their workers gets to stay is just wrong. And again, it is the H2A program in the USW, we call it hardness to abuse, because that is exactly what happens. Farm workers, as it is, they're abused, but this program makes it even easier to abuse the workers.
The other question I have, President Romero, is that, you know, California is a magnet for tourism. You know, the hospitality industry is, you know, major in the state. Well, they depend on food. You know, Cali cuisine, you know, the whole foodie movement is all based around California and its agriculture. Has those industries shown any concern? Have they shown any kind of support for workers, you know, particularly agricultural workers, or is there any discussions between those industries? Because it's going to impact them, you know, when they can't serve up their, you know, world-class, you know, chefs' cuisines because they're lacking the ingredients, you know, the vegetables and fruits, and even agricultural includes, you know, the beef industry, that whole, you know, food
dairy,
industry.
Eggs,
have they shown any concern?
We have talked, especially the hotel industry. We have spoken with other unions, especially in the hotel industry, because you're right. We have businesses, we have restaurants who depend on this workforce to make sure that they have what they need to prepare their foods and serve it to their customers and continue their business. That's what I'm saying. If it is going to get to the point where it's going to affect all of us, other unions, we're working with other unions. Unfortunately, this administration wants to govern by tweets or comments in a news channel. And that's not how we, you know, I like to say show, don't tell. You really want to do something, you really want to solve this problem with the need of experienced workers in the agricultural industry, that's the bill that you need to sign. But yes, it is going to affect every single one of us, and then we're going to depend on food that it is imported from other countries. And none of us want that.
This is Dennis Bernstein with Miguel Gavilan Molina. We are speaking with the president of the United Farm Workers Union, Teresa Romero. We're talking about, we're talking about everything to do with what's happening in the fields, the attacks coming from the federal government. I have to ask you, I mean, really at the core of a lot of this struggle is citizenship and the right for the people who do the hardest work in this country to be able to live here in peace and not feel like they are criminals. So this is the battle. On the other side of that, we do see this president, this extreme right-wing president, moving very quickly in the direction of control and deportation. What is your impression? How is the UFW taking, if you will, precautions dealing with the idea of that they're considering a national registry, 25 million naturalized citizens in more jeopardy? How do you think about in terms of your role?
You know, it is not about what he wants to do. Is he's going to be able to say, you know, we are deporting these many thousand, and he's using the word criminals. Farm workers are not criminals. And having a registry, you know, we cannot advise legally the workers, but we inform them what the registry is and what information, personal information they need to provide. And they're the ones that need to make the decision. But the fact that he is referring to brown people as criminals, he ran saying that he was going to deport criminals. And let me tell you something. I can tell him exactly what he needs to, where he can find the criminals in prisons. Those people were afforded already the right to be charged. to be tried, to be found guilty by a jury and sentenced by a judge. That is the process that we have in this country. Farm workers are not criminals, are being kidnapped, and they're disappearing. I don't know where they're sending him. So those things that he says about a registry, those things that he says he's going to stop the raid, those things that he says that he's going to figure out something for the farmers to have their workforce, I can't, you know, again, show, don't tell. I cannot believe anything he says when, like, once again, we have a bill that would solve the problem. And that's exactly what we need to do, and everybody would benefit. We need to remember this bill was negotiated by Republicans, by Democrats, by growers associations, and the UFW. And we all compromised to ensure that the workforce, that the experienced workforce that has been here, would continue to work in agriculture, but at the same time would get the benefit of a path to citizenship. And that's what we need to do. That's how we need to treat this workforce that put food on our table every single day.
And to be clear, when you say kidnapped, disappearing, this is not hyperbole. This is what's happening on the ground, isn't it? This is
correct.
Part of this
correct.
Terrifying policy.
Exactly, because again, when when you're walking on the street and a masked man comes to you and forces you into a vehicle, what you're going to do is going to fight because you don't know what's happening. And that's what the workers are facing right now. And all because we want to make sure that people see on the news that this administration is deporting criminals. Again, these people are not criminals. These people are doing the work that none of us would be able to do. We need to remember that how physical it is. Here in California, they work in areas where the temperature can get up to 115, 120 degrees. They're bending over, they're on their knees, and people who say they're taking our job, I invite them to apply for a job here to see how long they would last in agriculture.
Yeah. Dennis Bernstein here again with Miguel Gavilan Molina. Gavilan?
Well, it's a big concern. But my question, President Romero, is, you know, we know the situation. Basically, there is a domestic war against the brown masses in this country. And here in California, whether you're a farm worker, domestic worker, day laborer, construction worker, you could, you know, janitor, you can even be what we call a paleta man, you know, selling ice cream and popsicles, you know, out of a little cart, and be susceptible, you know, to be kidnapped. I look back in the rural areas. I came from a rural town in Sonoma County, Hillsborough, California. And when you're from a little rural town, there's not much, you know, that's going to be there to help you. In those areas, particularly around the valley, you know, where you have little townships, are people there organized? Are they organizing? Is anybody doing like community workshops on what to do if the if ICE arrives? And what to do, for instance, if they see unmarked vehicles, you know, people in masks, you don't know who they are. Are people reacting by videotaping them, taking pictures? Are people calling police stations and going, hey, there's some unidentified people here in masks and they have guns? I mean, are you hearing any of that? Or are there workshops helping, you know, to be like quick response to, you know, what I'm calling an invasion of body snatchers? Which are these, you know, who are these people? Mercenaries, bounty hunters, you know, they have a contract with ICE. I mean, I'm concerned about that. Is there a response that the union is taking?
We have been informing workers of their rights. We have been communicating with them since Trump won the election because we knew that the risk that they were going to face under this administration. We have people sending us videos of how they're chasing workers in the field.
Yes.
And again, they're entering private property. We have been talking to employers and telling them, you don't have to let them in unless they have a court order. Unfortunately, in agriculture, the fields are expense, and it is very difficult to control, and they know that. But we have been doing this for months. The problem is, like I said, they're not following the Constitution. They're not respecting their rights. They're saying that they want to talk to an attorney, and attorneys go to the detention centers, and they don't let them talk to them. So it is right now the racism that exists, but it is exacerbated by the fact that they are trampling on the Constitution and doing exactly what they want to do. And I don't want to get political here, but the only way that we're going to be able to control this is if we get Congress back to where we can have some level of control and create laws that would stop this from happening. This administration has no control, are doing exactly whatever they want.
You're absolutely correct. I mean, ICE has become, you know, ICE, inhumane cruelty enforcement by the government. Mm-hmm. It's just out of control and lawless. That said, you know, and I see the process, you know, case after case after case goes to the courts. But in this instance, again, my concern is the safety of the workers and their familias, their mm-hmm. families. And again, something interesting has happened. A lot of farm workers, a lot of Spanish-speaking communities are Catholics. And, you know, a Catholic pope was just elected, you know, that is from the United States. You know, an idea, somebody said, hey, maybe the farm workers, because they always carry the Virgin of Guadalupe, La Tonantzin, in their walks, yeah. in their marches, in their activities. Have you attempted to reach out to the Pope? Because he is from the country. He has taken a stance against the abuse of, you know, immigrants in his country. Is that something that, you know, you might consider?
You know, we have reached out to a couple of bishops, the Archbishop of Los Angeles, and asked for help. There's the bishop from Brennan from Fresno is going to officiate mass to make sure that farm workers understand that, and not only farm workers, all immigrants understand that the church is with them. I had not thought yes. about reaching to the Pope, but I think that's something that we will definitely consider, because yes, he's a person, from what he has said, that supports immigrants, supports human beings, supports not separating parents from their children, their parents, their spouses. That is what we need to stop. And yeah, I will do what I can to reach out to him.
Can I before we let you go? I'm sorry, Gavilan. We're running out of time. But before I let you go, President Romero, I want to bring it back to the children. And I've been hearing some interesting things. The new generation sort of standing up, those who have citizenship standing for their parents and the elders. There's been a real resistance within the farm worker community. There's been organizing, but it's also been a situation of terror for many young people who stopped going to school. Is that your understanding, that people are now afraid to go to school to use the various centers? Is there a special caution being taken now?
You know, the both the parents and the children are afraid to go to school. What we are focusing with the parents is, you know, making sure that especially the children have to try to continue as a life that is as normal as possible under the circumstances. So what we're working with communities is figuring out who can take the children to school. You know, a neighbor that is a citizen. The child care that takes care of the kids, you know, picking them up, taking them to school, and from school, picking them up and taking them to child care. We're trying to figure out how we can do that as much as possible. And we're also trying to let them know to be prepared, unfortunately, for the worst. If this is happening, it happens to one of them, are they prepared? Do the kids know where they need to go? The other spouse that is not working in agriculture, or the stay-at-home parent, do they know where the car, who's the papers for the car, who they pay the rent to, you know, things that I'm unfortunately, I wish we didn't have to go through what we're going, but we're doing that. Because if they're detained, we want to make it as not easy, and I can't even find the word, as less traumatic, in the sense that at least the family knows what they need to do. But it is sad that we had to prepare the families for something like that.
Wow. Well, we, Miguel and I, are grateful that you could take the time out to join us today. It's an honor to be with you and to have you on to share this kind of crucial information. You are the president of the United Farm Workers. That's a very important and unique institution that represents, as I said earlier, the people who do the hardest work in this country, who make our tables beautiful, who make it possible for us to live, are now being brutalized, undermined, mistreated, disparaged, and the situation under Trump is not seem to be getting any better. So we thank you for the information, and we hope that you will stay safe. And Miguel and I would love to talk to you again in the future.
Thank you very much, of course, and I appreciate you bringing attention to this important issue.
Thank you. And you are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to continue this discussion in a little bit of a different level with Renee Salcedo. We're going to take an extended musical break. Mike's got some music for us. When we come back, we'll be with Renee Salcedo. Miguel will stay with me. There's a lot more to talk about. Stay with us. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, KPFA in the Bay Area. It's your daily investigative news magazine. We speak truth to power 5 days a week, 5 weekdays, from 5 to 6 here, originating in the Bay Area. Dennis Bernstein with our senior producer, Miguel Gavilo Molina, and a really appreciated guest of this show, Renee Salcedo, who does extraordinary work too for the people. So welcome back, Miguel, and say hello to your friend Renee Salcedo. Welcome, Renee.
Thank you, Dennis and Miguel. It's always a pleasure.
Well, it's good to have you with us. I wish Miguel and I surely wish that times were better, but these are the times that your work is most important, what you do. Well, tell us a little bit about Almas and the Libres Reyes and the sort of the focus, and then what you've been up to lately, which has been a lot.
Sure. I have the honor and the privilege of working with mainly undocumented women every day. For the most part, they're house cleaners and caregivers. They work in the restaurants, in the hotel industry here in Sonoma County, which is the part of the center of, you know, wine country. So their services are so necessary and needed here. The billions of dollars in profits that are made are basically made on the backs of these and other workers. They also include the women who clean the homes of folks, including the houses that have been destroyed in the fires, exposing themselves to chemicals and other dangers. These workers here in Sonoma County, of course, are a representation of the workers all over California and all over the country, including the farm workers that Sister Teresa Romero was talking about. The kinds of things that we are doing now, Dennis, is, you know, for the most part, we're getting ready. We're preparing ourselves up here based on what's going on in the LA area, San Diego area, the frightening stories of people being kidnapped and the National Guard and Marines used to squash dissent. Of course, there has been enforcement activities up here. Don't get me wrong. The La Migra, as we call it, or ICE, has been conducting enforcement activities at much higher levels. Now, they're not going to people's homes as much as they were a few years ago. I think it's because people do understand their rights more and they're not opening their doors. So ICE is arresting people at public places like gas stations. We were helping out a family who recently was impacted by the deportation of the head of household, and the family of eight was desperate to find a way to pay rent. And of course, you remember the case about 1 or 2 months ago where the person who had just been released from Sonoma County Jail was immediately after arrested by ICE in the probation department as he was checking in to the probation department. So we're seeing activities now and we're getting ready. We have a very powerful coalition that consists of various sectors and is led by immigrant workers called the Sonoma County Sanctuary Coalition. And what we're doing is we're putting resistance into practice and really not only advocating for a local sanctuary ordinance, which Sonoma County still does not have, like most other jurisdictions in our area do, but we're also creating an infrastructure, a sanctuary where community supports community. We defend ourselves. And so we've got congregations involved, labor unions, and a whole bunch of individuals who are creating systems where we're going to businesses and talking to business owners about not letting ICE onto the premises. We're advocating with cities and the county to make sure that there are protocols so that ICE cannot enter and just arrest anybody. It's been a process, and it's bringing folks together, and we're really proud of it. So that's a few things that's going on here in Sonoma County. We're thinking in terms of resistance and the community defending community, because we can't rely on our public officials to do that for us.
Well, what do you do if somebody comes to you and or would you do if somebody comes to you and says, my husband, my wife, my son, my grandmother was kidnapped, I don't know where to start?
Well, what we do is we get them involved at various levels. We have a rapid response network that is very strong up here in Northern California, and we plug people into that so that folks who are trained can refer people to emergency legal services, and so that their loved ones can be found, probably incarcerated somewhere in one of the immigrant prisons. We also have, part of our sanctuary work is that congregations are organizing and mobilizing their members to not only offer, you know, moral support to families who are impacted, but also things like temporary housing, accompaniment to appointments, including court, and so that's what we've created. But the thing that I want to highlight, Dennis and Miguel, is that we're not just, you know, we're not only receiving people as they are impacted by the Gestapo-like enforcement tactics that ICE is practicing lately. We are practicing resistance and sanctuary by making ICE's job as difficult as we can, by establishing these protocols, by making sure that businesses know that they can lock their doors if ICE shows up, and by accompanying people to their appointments to make sure that ICE doesn't arrest them. Because we want to be prepared for what is probably going to happen, especially once Trump's reconciliation budget bill passes. And millions and millions of more dollars are going to be poured into enforcement of ICE, not only at the border, but inland as well. So we're preparing for the mass raids. We know what they've been doing in Southern California, like arresting day laborers in front of Home Depots and taking people, kidnapping them without any uniform, without any badge, with their faces covered. It's, you know, it's a campaign of terror that we're experiencing in our state, and here in Sonoma County and in surrounding counties. We want to be as ready as we can to make ICE's job almost impossible.
You're listening to Renee Saucedo on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, KPFA. Dennis Bernstein here. Also joining us is our senior producer and old friend of yours, Miguel Gavila Molina.
Well, one of the things, thank you for being with us, Renee, and the one thing that really concerns me, this reign of terror that's happening here in California and other parts of the country against basically the brown communities, workers, laborers. You know, there are some families that are afraid to send their kids to school. There's some people that are deciding they can't go to work because they're afraid. And that eventually, you know, adds up. You know, people need to eat. People need to have, you know, food. Is there any support being given for, let's say, individuals that say, hey, I haven't been at work in 2 weeks because I'm afraid. My kids, I'm keeping my kids at home, but I'm running out of food. Is there any assistance? Is there a food bank to look into those, you know, situations with families to help them in these times?
Yes. Here in our county, there is. But let me address the first part of your question, which is the reign of terror, Megan. We have to really understand what is going on here. The level of intimidation and terror that the federal government wants to impose on our people, we haven't seen in decades. The combination not only of the raids and arrests, the violence used, the breaking of windows, the separation of families, you know, of mothers right in front of their children, at the courthouses, at regularly scheduled appointments. But you also have, you know, these executive orders coming down almost every day from the Trump administration, you know, from requiring undocumented migrants to register with the federal government. I mean, how crazy is that? And it sounds like, you know, World War II type strategies that were used. The commercials that we see on TV, the threats. And, you know, just so that we all understand what this is about, Trump and his followers want to continue to create this pool of what is perceived as vulnerable workers to work for even cheaper and to be exploited even more, right? The corporate interests in this country have wanted for years to replace deported workers with temporary workers, or braceros, as we call them, as they call them during the 1940s and 1950s. They want cheap, available labor, people whose status is unclear, who won't complain about their working conditions. And we have a system of private immigrant prisons that, capture migrant workers and charge them while they are incarcerated for things like phone calls. So they use them as a source of cheap labor while they are incarcerated. There are migrant jails and prisons, for example, that will charge, you know, a dollar to make a call to a loved one. Or we hear about families who have to send money to their loved ones just to pay for food inside the prison. So this is a very conscious way to create a pool of cheap, exploitable laborers, in addition to Trump wanting to make his political point, right? Score political points with his base. Of course, let's scapegoat the undocumented migrants so that people won't think about the war in the Middle East, so people won't think about how gas prices are not going down, how groceries are still expensive, and how Trump's budget still contains tax breaks for the super wealthy. So given all that, we're up against a formidable opponent, because we've got, you know, Trump's administration, but we also have his corporate lackeys who are benefiting from all these policies that are only causing suffering among our people. Is there help? Yes, there is help. But, Miguel, I think the better question is, what are we doing to fight back? We need to resist. We need to continue the mass protests. We had the pleasure of helping to organize a three-day walk last month from Vacaville to Sacramento, demanding that California step up to condemn the deportations and to call for a swift path to citizenship in Congress. And we got a response. There was a victory after this organizing. Not only did people see the level of sacrifice that undocumented workers were able to make to gain basic human rights for themselves and their families, because most of the walkers were undocumented, but we also achieved Senator Durazo in Sacramento introducing a resolution condemning the deportations and adding funding for legal services and other assistance, which you are alluding to, Gavilan. And we also walked to demand that a path to citizenship be the right solution for the 12 million people who have no option to adjust their status right now. no option to be able to apply for legal permanent residency. So I think that we need to continue to strategize in creative ways. How are we going to push back and resist? And I'll tell you, I've learned so much from my brothers and sisters in Southern California, how they've created, you know, barrio committees and response teams, and have really, really put a dent in ICE's enforcement activities through the organizing of everyday people.
Si se puede.
Si se puede. Claro que se
and,
puede.
This is, absolutely, this is the summer of rage. You know, people are rising everywhere. But one of the things that, right now, Renee, and that's something that's come up this week, and that's the whole registry. You know, can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because I know that some of the actions you've made is to get, you know, reactivate the registry so people can be processed. Where is that with you right now? How do you see this?
I'm so glad you're asking that question, Gavilan, because there is some confusion.
Yes.
A path to citizenship through the registry process is very different from the registration requirement that Trump came out with through an executive order. Let me start with Trump's executive order first. His requirement for undocumented folks to register with the federal government went into effect April 1st. And all it does is that it instructs undocumented migrants to register with the federal government online immediately. What is the purpose of this registration? It's an enforcement tool. You register with the federal government so that the federal government can more easily find you, detain you, and deport you. The problem is that many of our folks have registered already because they have pending applications, right? They have asylum applications or have applied for legal permanent residency through a relative. And so the Trump administration knows how to find those folks. People are asking, what do I do? Do I register and comply with this new rule? And maybe there will be less chance of me getting in trouble, or do I not register so that way they won't find me and deport me? And what I tell the folks who I work with is people have to weigh the potential consequences in their lives and make the decision for themselves. But, you know, I would say in general, as you heard me say in Sacramento a few weeks ago, why would people register with a government just so that the government can more easily find them and deport them? So that's the registration piece. How is it being enforced? It hasn't been yet. We don't know if Trump is going to enforce it. We'll have to see. That is different from the registry process, and I know it's confusing because it's almost the same word, right? But there is a process still on the books, an immigration law that back in the 1920s started to allow migrants who were living in the country for a certain number of years could apply automatically for their legal permanent residency. And this process was called the registry process because people, you know, would sign up and basically say, hey, I've been living in this country for this amount of time. I'm going to apply. Right now, organizers and advocates across the country think that this might be the best way to pass a path to citizenship bill in D.C., because what we would do is simply amend the current law to say that as long as you've been in the country for 7 years, you can apply for legal permanent residency. Is it a perfect law? No, because it excludes a lot of people, including people who have been convicted of serious crimes. And we don't, you know, we don't buy into the distinction between criminal migrants and non-criminal migrants, good migrants and bad migrants. So that's something that would have to change. But we do have to, I think it would be good to update this registry process. It would be the easiest way to do it this way, because right now you need to have entered the country in the 1970s in order to benefit. Well, hardly anyone qualifies anymore, so we have to update it. That's the difference between Trump's, you know, forced registration and gaining legal permanent residency through the registry process.
That's incredibly helpful, Renee. Dennis Bernstein here with Miguel Gavilan Molina. I want to just circle back to young people and the kids, Renee. Do you or organizations have a formal relationship now with local schools, working with teachers? And the other half of this is, have ICE already tried to go to schools? Have they taken any action through the schools to get at the family that way, through the children?
Here in Sonoma County, we have absolutely been working with the schools and the school districts. We have several school districts here in our county, and most of them have already declared their campuses sanctuary. We're in the process right now of examining what exactly that means. And again, we have to get down to the nitty-gritty. How are we going to implement that? What protocols are school campuses going to have to make sure that ICE agents and other paramilitaries are not allowed onto school campuses? Luckily, they have not entered our schools here. I did hear reports in other states that ICE tried to get onto school campuses, even tried to get into at least one high school graduation. I think that may have been near Chicago. You know, we're bracing for the worst, hoping for the best, but bracing for the worst here in California, not only because Trump has a particular vendetta against our state, but also because Congress may appropriate the funding that he wants in order to beef up enforcement. And if they get that money, we're going to see a lot more activity as far as trying to open up new prisons. Here in Northern California alone, there would be, you know, the Dublin prison, the Travis Air Base site, and even Alcatraz, which for many of us is a sacred site. So, yeah, it's it could get nasty here as it has in other places, and, you know, we just have to learn. Again, we have to learn from the activists in these other areas, and we have to support the empowerment of our people to be able to do what will be needed if the worst happens.
Thank you, Renee Salcedo. Dennis Bernstein here with Miguel Gavilan Molina. As always, Renee, it's enlightening to be with you, and the audience appreciates. I can just feel people leaning in to listen and learn, and your message of resistance is coming across loud and clear. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. We, Miguel and I, are just delighted that we have this kind of information that we can share. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Stay tuned.
And that does it for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. Our theme music is written and produced by Charlie Lang. For questions, comments, email Dennis Bernstein at dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.